WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. From San Diego to Los Angeles to Las Vegas, people are preparing for the first tropical storm to hit the region since 1939. CBS's Carter Evans is in Southern California.
Fragile hillsides already eroded, with buildings left as cliffhangers are in harm's way now. Slides are the biggest threat if pounding rain hits as forecast.
This is potentially an unprecedented extreme weather event for Los Angeles, Southern California, and the rest of the West Coast.
All day Friday, authorities took advantage of the calm before the storm to build berms in vulnerable beach communities. High surf is on the way, and swift water rescue teams are on standby.
If you combine the high surf with the high winds, that's when we start getting into trouble.
Don't come to the devastated areas of Maui just to gawk, says Hawaii Governor Josh Green.
We humbly ask that people please not travel to the area affected by the disaster in West Maui until further notice, except for returning residents and authorized emergency relief workers. However, all other areas of Maui and the rest of Hawaii are safe and open to visitors.
Yesterday, officials raised the death toll to 114, but they caution that hundreds of people are still missing. Donald Trump is uncharacteristically passing up a chance to be on television. CBS's Linda Kenyon says he will not be appearing at the Republican presidential debate on Wednesday in Milwaukee.
The stage may be crowded, but reportedly former President Trump is expected to sit this one out. The former president has indicated he's planning to take part in a competing event, an online interview with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson.
FBI agents are searching for a man who vanished just days before his scheduled sentencing on a conviction related to the January 6th insurrection. More from CBS's Dana Jacobson.
A judge has issued a bench warrant for Christopher Worrell's arrest. The Proud Boy failed to show for his sentencing hearing on Friday. Worrell was convicted on all seven charges, including assault. Prosecutors say he attacked officers with pepper spray as they tried to stop rioters from storming the Capitol. He was on house arrest in Florida since his release from jail in November 2021.
President Biden brought the leaders of Japan and South Korea to Camp David yesterday. Details from CBS's Nancy Cordes.
He began meeting with the two leaders of those countries, both individually and together on the sidelines of various summits. He invited them here to the D.C. area independently to meet with both of them, and he urged them to work together.
They're trying to create a united front to respond to aggression from China. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The Republicans running for president debate in Wisconsin next week. Before that, they'll be subject to the straw poll at the Iowa State Fair this weekend. With more, here's Mark Moran.
The Iowa State Fair has long been known for grassroots political campaigning. This year's no exception. Republican presidential hopefuls have descended on the fair ahead of the first national GOP debate. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate says while the politician's state fair soapbox speeches tend to cater to the Hawkeye state's rural roots, Iowans' voices play a key role in the nominating process nationwide.
We've got a significant responsibility of helping with this job interview for candidates running for president, and we need to take that role seriously, and we need to make sure we're asking the tough questions of candidates, giving the rest of the country a chance to see and hear how they answer it.
The Republican Presidential Caucus in Iowa is scheduled to be the nation's first on January 15th, while Democrats are still finalizing their date. Pate says while the candidates' messages are targeted to Iowans, the issues they discuss in their soapbox speeches cut across geographical lines. paid ads that being just a few feet away from the candidates allows people to ask questions rather than hearing more well-worn campaign slogans.
You get much more access than you might if it was just a retail campaign where they bought a bunch of radio, TV, and newsprint ads and bombarded you just direct mail. That's all one-sided, one way. This requires them to actually think on their feet.
The Iowa State Fair, which dates to 1854, wraps up Sunday. I'm Mark Moran. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, August 19th, 2023. Thank you for joining me here on Morning Cannolis this morning, as every Saturday morning. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion of those major important stories, news events in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Once again, I appreciate your spending some time with me this hour and perhaps next hour as well. 2 full hours this morning, as always, talking about justice in America, government, and law issues as well. We're coming to you live this morning from the studios of Civic Media in downtown, beautiful downtown Waukesha, but broadcasting throughout beautiful Wisconsin to stations throughout the Civic Media world. Welcoming all of you to our discussion this morning, and to do that through the wonderful work, the professional work, the engaging work of my terrific producer, Anya. We're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 throughout these 2 hours. You can also go on the Civic Media app, find our show, and pull down your particular news station, and you can also text us comments, questions, ideas, perspectives that you wanted to share with me and with Anya this morning on our broadcast. Thank you once again for joining us. As always, we ask this morning, as we do every Saturday morning, 3 important questions. What happened? We've got some big news this past week to talk about. We'll talk about that right off the top of our show this morning. What are the facts? What do we know about what's going on out there in America and beyond? Why are those facts? Why are those news stories important? What is the significance of them? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to our understanding about who we are in America, how we live our lives, what our livelihood is all about? And what should we do? We can't always do everything about the events in our lives, but there are times, especially in these areas having to do with law and government and justice, where there are things we can do, responses we can pursue, answers we can provide. What are our actions to do, to undertake in response to those things that happen that we know are important in our lives? Asking those questions this morning, as always. Our syllabus is ambitious once again, very ambitious this morning, achievable. And it turns out that because of the great number of significant news stories in these areas throughout this past week, that this is the second in the third arc of broadcast where we're talking about the indictments, of course, against the former President Donald Trump. We're going to begin today at the second hour to chat a little bit more about the indictment coming out of Georgia. We'll talk about that right at the top of our show, but then go back today. Go back today to follow up on the discussion we began last week, analyzing, doing some exposition, actually some readings from this major indictment coming out now a couple of weeks ago with respect to the January 6th insurrection, the attempt, unsuccessful, thankfully, for America to not only undermine but to overthrow the election results of 2020. We're going to talk more in great length about that particular indictment, but we've also got some things right off the top of our show this morning, some rule of law snapshots we're going to share with you as a part of our exposition of these important stories every single week. So lots of things to talk about this morning. Again, always inviting your comments, your questions, your perspectives, and your thoughts here on Morning Cannolis. Let's begin with some of those rule of law snapshots. The two of them right at the top of our broadcast this morning, not having to do with the January 6th insurrection and events both before and after that, the conspiracy to overthrow the results of that election, but instead hearkening back to issues that we have chatted about before on this broadcast. That is violence in America, and in particular, violence that's perpetrated by people with guns to accomplish mass shootings in America. Two significant stories from recent weeks, from early August and then from just this past week, related to guns in America and the horrific effect of guns on our livelihood, our lives, our well-being, our safety and security, not only in Wisconsin, but throughout our United States of America. Let's begin by going across Lake Michigan to the state of Michigan, our partner right across the pond in the great Midwest, and that is the state of Michigan. A judge is scheduled to rule on September 29th, a little bit more than a month from now, on whether Ethan Crumbly should be sentenced to life imprisonment without parole. That is, of course, the harshest punishment available that's in Michigan. Ethan Crumbly, you may recall, is this Oxford High School shooter who pleaded guilty to one count of terrorism, causing the death of individuals, four counts of first-degree murder, and 19 other charges. All of that related to what? Related to the November 2021 shooting at Oxford High School there in Michigan. You recall he fatally shot almost at completely right up against them, right at them. Four students, injured seven other people when he was 15 years old. Obviously, Ethan Crumbly today, older than that, but again, pled guilty to those counts of terrorism. Again, all under state law, also four counts of first-degree murder. Over 4 days this past week, Oakland County prosecutors, which is the circuit court, the county court in which this particular case has been prosecuted, it's a state case, it's a criminal case, they're prosecuting and trying to determine by presenting to the judge evidence of what should happen. What should happen to Ethan Crumbly for his horrific events, the horrific things that he did there in Oakland County? Prosecutors and the shooter's defense team, also part of our process, presented witness testimony over the period of the past week or so, and evidence is what's called a Miller hearing. Basically, the Supreme Court telling us if you're going to imprison a minor, someone who is not an adult, you need to show some extraordinary circumstances that would justify that, keeping that prisoner, that defendant in prison for a life sentence without the possibility of parole. So that's what the question's all about. Oakland County Circuit Court Judge Kwame Rowe, R-O-W-E, will now determine again on September 29th, going to announce the decision then, whether prosecutors did in fact meet their burden to prove that a life term is a proportionate sentence for Crumbly. That coming up. Closing argument on Friday, the prosecutor, a woman named Karen McDonald, she's the Oakland County prosecutor, told the court that she had first struggled on the issue, but ultimately determined that the teen should be one of the rare minors in our nation who should receive the state's most severe punishment. That is the imprisonment without the possibility of parole, life imprisonment. She said this. She said, "I learned that there has never been an offense or offender like this one, not just in our state, but our country." She said, "This is a person who killed four of our classmates, of his classmates, solely for the pleasure of killing and to increase the body count to try to make himself famous. It wasn't impulsive, and their expert even acknowledges that." They're making reference to the defense presentation. And so that determination underway today. Prosecutors pointed out to Crumbly's premeditation of the attack as a reason he should receive this life sentence. They played audio messages in court in which the teen said, "I'm going to be the next school shooter, and that he would vow to have so much fun. Defense attorney, of course, also has a role to play in all this. Asked the judge to consider some mitigating factors in favor of a prison sentence with parole eligibility at some point down the road. Like his difficult home life and ignored pleas to his parents for mental health treatment and other things. The defense counsel implored the court to give Crumbly a chance to be rehabilitated and to let a parole board at some point down the road make that determination. And so that happening in Michigan just this past week in the wake of that horrific mass shooting the previous year here. As we had indicated back in November of 2021. Another event happening earlier this month in August. This one also related to a mass shooting. You may recall well, facts surrounding the shooting not at all undisputed. The morning of October 27th, 2018, people gathering for Shabbat services, the synagogue, the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and a fellow named Robert Bowers, 50. Shot his way into the building, roamed the halls and the chapels, killing worshipers, considered one of the deadliest anti-Semitic attacks in the nation's history. The jury previously found Robert Bowers guilty on 63 charges, 63 separate charges, including dozens of hate crimes, civil rights offenses. Weeks later, the jury also determined that he was, in fact, eligible for the death penalty. The death penalty based upon this. Again, this is a federal prosecution going on in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They disagreed with the contention from Bowers' lawyers, that mental illness made him incapable of forming a true intent to kill, which, of course, is required to show that, indeed, a defendant is guilty of the offense conduct with which he or she is charged. They had only one decision left, and they made that decision earlier this month, whether Mr. Bowers should be executed or spend the rest of his life in prison for these horrible crimes that he engaged in. Defense and prosecutors made closing arguments in the sentencing issue earlier this month. 12 jurors began to deliberate shortly after 9 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, and shortly thereafter, the jury returned a verdict. Convicting Robert Bowers, again, not only as they did previously of killing these 11 worshipers, but also finding that he should indeed receive the death penalty. The death penalty imposed upon Robert Bowers, again, not a usual thing in the federal system. It requires a huge amount of review internal, not only to the U.S. Attorney's Office in the particular district where the prosecution is being pursued, but also the Attorney General, up and down all sorts of committees and all sorts of offices inside Maine Justice. Ultimately, only the Attorney General can authorize a petition, a request to the court to impose the death penalty. Here, that authorization given by our present Attorney General. And again, the jury, based upon its sequential decisions in this case, its final determination that indeed, under the circumstances of this case, Robert Bowers should be sentenced to death in the federal system. Plainly, a very controversial matter in America, the death penalty. In some states, yes, in some states, no. But in this particular case, finding, the jury did, that the nature of the conduct was so heinous, so extraordinarily violent and horrific, that it is appropriate in the federal system to impose the death penalty upon Robert Bowers. Two events of this past month significant in the life and the livelihood of our nation and the administration of justice when it comes to these horrific events involving guns, involving violence, and the deaths of our fellow citizens in two different venues. We know it continues. We know in America that today, to this point in this year, we've had more mass shootings than we've had days in the calendar year. When we come back, we're going to get back to some other rule of law snapshots, including some specific events this past week related to those January 6 indictments, the other indictments currently presently pending against our former president. And then we're going to go back into our discussion of the January 6 federal indictment. Stay with us for that important discussion this morning on Morning Cannolis.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
A perfect day starts with perfect breakfast. Start your day with Brunch It Up. Our experts are serving up the ultimate brunch experience. Our menu is loaded with inventive dishes from chicken and waffles to cinnamon roll pancakes. Try unique cocktails like Brunch Bloody Mary with house-infused vodka. Come brunch it up over bottomless mimosas or a midday pick-me-up. Or with the whole family for an unforgettable Sunday brunch. Brunch It Up in Milwaukee, Brookfield, or Cedarburg from 7 to 3 on weekdays and 8 to 3 on weekends. Let's brunch it up.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. and click on the Careers tab.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny this afternoon with highs around 84. Winds out of the south, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, lows around 68. High temperatures reach up to 90. Tomorrow, mainly clear skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times Monday, with daytime highs approaching 80. 83 Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 64 degrees.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
And we are back after that first break here in Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, August 19th, 2023. Beginning our broadcast this morning, talking about these two events in America, one in Michigan related to the shooting there, the school shooting there, and the decision coming up by a circuit court judge there about whether to impose upon the young defendant the term of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole for his killing of fellow students there. And then also chatting about this decision by the jury imposed now by the court to impose the death penalty on Robert Bowers for his shooting of 11 people, his injuring of many, many more at the Tree of Life synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That synagogue, of course, sits in a neighborhood with a rich Jewish history. It was home to three separate congregations, all of which were gathering for services in different parts of that building in that morning. Founded in Pittsburgh more than 150 years ago, the smaller New Light Congregation and the Tree of Life Congregation, both a part of this conservative branch of Judaism. Third congregation, the Dor Hadash, a Reconstructionist, a more liberal branch, again, indicating that this is a place of community, of open doors, and again, of a horrific place in America now because of the terror, the horrific events visited upon that congregation and upon all of us based upon what Robert Bowers did, now facing the death penalty in our federal system. I've had the benefit throughout this past, much of this past year, to have as my at my side my wonderful producer. We talk about her on the air quite frequently. She is terrific, and she supports me in ways big and small every single week. And Anya, I've gotten to know as also a very incredibly insightful, thoughtful person, and she has some comments to offer to all of us, me included, about this Tree of Life shooting and the result that comes this past month there in Pittsburgh. Anya, your thoughts, your comments this morning.
Well, thank you, Jim. And it truly is so sweet to hear you say that because you are so insightful. Our callers constantly talk about it, so thank you for the opportunity. One thing that I feel a lot of places are not covering about this story with Tree of Life is why Tree of Life was selected by this killer. And Tree of Life was selected by this killer because of the fact that it had recently hosted a Shabbat, which is a Friday night, into Saturday morning and Saturday evening holiday that Jews have every week. During a Shabbat service, they had recently raised money for HIAS, H-I-A-S, which is the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which was founded in 1881. And I think it's important to highlight that this place of worship was selected because this person felt that Jews were responsible for bringing immigrants, refugees, people this person found distasteful into this country. So if your heart has been moved by the story of Tree of Life, I would encourage you to look into Hias. It's been around since 1881. It still exists to help refugees and immigrants. And the same week that they had their Hias Shabbat, my community in Milwaukee had ours. So it hits close when you know that any of us could have been selected because of our choice to remain connected with this community organization that wants to help people around the world. So it hurts that I haven't heard other outlets cover it, and I just wanted to throw that out there. So back to you, Jim.
Anya, thank you so very much for that insightful perspective on this story. Again, lots of aspects here to this. Undeniably, Robert Bowers, motivated by hate, by a sense of the other, and again, specifically, as you indicated, selecting this particular venue, this place of service, this place of engagement, this place of humanity, for a purpose. And not only do we stop him from doing that, we send the message, as Anya, your important words say this morning, to other people, that if you do this kind of thing, not only is it intolerable, we talk a lot about the importance of language in conveying that, but you will be stopped. And in this case, because of the things that he did, the federal government has decided through the process of justice to impose the death penalty upon him, making that selection, as Anya said, for a reason, for a purpose, targeting this particular community, this particular congregation. Anya, thank you so much for that insight, that perspective. As we continue to talk, as we will down the road also, about not only guns in America, but these kinds of things, identifying people who are perceived inappropriately, wrongly, as the other, as people who are not a part of our community, and the responses that we should and necessarily need to pursue against all of them. Anya, thank you so much for that. Promised this morning that we would chat about some other what I'm calling rule of law snapshots, but all of them come again in the wake of the big news story this past week having to do with the return of an indictment, another indictment, the fourth criminal indictment against our former president. We're going to talk a little bit about that and then move to these other snapshot stories that are also related to these four indictments and other matters pending against our former president. And then, as I said, in the latter portion of our first hour, into the next hour, I'm going to return to that January 6th indictment that we began to talk about last week, this important and charging document coming out of Washington, D.C., alleging federal offenses against a singular defendant. His name, of course, is Donald John Trump. We know that just this past Monday, a grand jury sitting in the state of Georgia indicted Donald Trump and 18 other people named in the indictment in this sprawling racketeering investigation, this sprawling racketeering charge, if you will, multi-pronged effort described in this indictment to overturn the narrow election loss in Georgia that he suffered in 2020. He's now facing, as we well know, four separate criminal charges. This indictment laying out the most broad set of accusations against the former president, 13 counts, including racketeering, making false statements, and pressuring public officials to violate their oath of office. Among those charged in this 41-count indictment, the culmination, again, of this about 2.5-year investigation in Fulton County, led by the DA there, her name is Fannie Willis, also involving the former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, and a great number of lawyers, which we're going to talk about at some point down the road as well, including Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, Ken Chesbro, Jenna Ellis, and Sidney Powell, all these lawyers, once again, involved in this. When we come back after this break, talking a little bit more about that, and then providing some other information about big stories this past week before we get back to that January 6th indictment coming out of the Federal District Court in D.C. Stay with us for this important discussion.
Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw,
540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Southern California is preparing for the arrival of a tropical storm tomorrow. The Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass says the storm has a bead on the region.
Hillary, still a major hurricane this morning. It is a Category 4, packing winds of over 130 miles per hour near the center of the storm, kind of paralleling the Baja Peninsula.
Hundreds of people are still missing, 114 now confirmed dead in the wildfires that destroyed a city on Maui. Mayor Richard Bisson.
A lot of these folks out here on West Maui did not wait. They helped each other. I like to call it locally led. And
former President Trump has reportedly decided to skip the Republican presidential candidates debate next week, disappointing the network that's airing it, says UVA political analyst Larry Sabato.
Fox was counting on Donald Trump to provide a big share of the audience, and he probably would have. He is the main draw.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A Sussex couple and their dog were found dead in their home this week, with the cause of death undetermined. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports the people were identified as Maggie Howard Weigel and Gary Weigel. The paper also reports the Waukesha County Medical Examiner's Office is awaiting test results from a lab that's expected in about 2 months. At this point, additional details aren't known. The second young woman who was convicted in the Slender Man stabbing case has changed her stance on leaving the state mental hospital. Morgan Geiser's legal team recently withdrew their request for her release from the facility where she's been held since 2017. In 2014, Geiser and Anessa Weyer, both 12 years old at the time, lured their 12-year-old friend into the woods and stabbed her 19 times. They were both committed to a state mental hospital for the crime, with Weyer's release occurring in 2021. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Hey, this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. And is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We are back this morning. It is Saturday, August 19th. This is Morning Cannolis, and we're spending much of our first hour talking about various stories coming out of the rule of law environment in our nation. Right now, chatting about this major fourth indictment against our former president, Donald Trump, coming out of Georgia, prosecutor there, Fani Willis, coming out of Fulton County, and a state grand jury returning this massive indictment against Donald Trump and and others for their involvement in trying to undermine, to overthrow the election results in 2020 there in Georgia. Recall well that Fannie Willis, the DA there, is looking into whether Mr. Trump and associates there violated Georgia law, and particularly bringing this charge under RICO, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, a state law that also has a federal parallel law to it as well, basically saying that you've got an enterprise, a criminal enterprise of people who've gotten together for a common purpose, sort of like a conspiracy, but again, under state law, alleging that their common purpose here was to once again interfere with the counting of votes, the proper election, the voting in Georgia more generally in this sprawling indictment, did various things along the way, all of those set forth at great length in this indictment. And what brings them together again is this common mission, this common purpose to accomplish fraud in Georgia. And that's what brings it together under RICO, a statute often used in the past, in years past, to go after so-called mobsters in our nation, but used more and more to identify enterprises of a white-collar nature, including this, when you've got this, again, consorted group of people, this enterprise put together, brought together, coming together to accomplish some inappropriate criminal and illegal criminal result. That's exactly what she is identified here in that indictment. This investigation, of course, began shortly after this recording was released, in which Donald Trump was talking to Brad Raffensperger, who is the Georgia Secretary of State. That was happening on January 2nd of 2021, well over 2 years ago. And you may recall well that during that call, Donald Trump insisted that he won the state of Georgia in the election, made baseless allegations of fraud, which are also a part of the indictment, even though multiple recounts confirmed that he had lost. And Trump told Raffensperger at that time that he wanted to find, that is, Trump wanted to find 11,780 votes, one more than he needed to win Georgia and its electoral college votes. No doubt, Georgia, among six other states, including Wisconsin, a lot of focus of the former president and now the named co-conspirators in that state case to try to reverse the results of the 2020 election. Over time, we became clear that this investigation in Georgia, like the investigation in the federal system as well, also pursuing false statements that lawyers made for and on behalf of the former president in state legislative hearings there in Georgia, a meeting about 16 pro-Trump Republicans who cast these bogus or false or fake electoral college votes for him, much as they did in these other states, including here in the state of Wisconsin. There was an intimidation campaign against a pair of Fulton County election workers. We will talk about them in a future broadcast as well, falsely accusing them of fraud, changing their lives, exposing them to the possibility and the terror, if you will, of people who are going after them because of these allegations, completely unfounded, that they engaged in some kind of voter fraud there. And a successful effort by some Trump allies there in Georgia also to copy sensitive software. An elections officer we haven't heard a lot about before in rural Coffee County, Georgia, about 200 miles away from Atlanta. All of that in this massive, huge indictment coming out of Georgia this past week. Again, alleging election fraud, forgery, false statements, impersonating public officers, soliciting public officers to violate their oath of office. This pro-Trump electors scheme, conspiracy to steal votes, this voter data, again, in Coffee County, and the harassment and intimidation of these election workers. We know them as Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss. They testified as well before the House committee looking at all of this, too. Mark Meadows, as I said before the break, significantly among those people who are specifically named in this indictment, charged in this indictment, and a lot more to come, including in our next broadcast next Saturday, an in-depth review of exactly some of the stories, the accounts that animate those charges, the RICO charges and the many other charges in that indictment. Donald Trump himself, again, charged in 13 different charges in that document: solicitation of violation of oath by a public officer, conspiracy to commit forgery, conspiracy to commit false statements themselves, conspiracy to commit impersonating a public officer, and conspiracy to commit filing false documents, in addition to this major count, the violation of the Georgia RICO Act And again, a lot of discussion, a lot of in-depth review of exactly the stories, the accounts in that, again, speaking indictment. We're going to talk about in our next broadcast and invite you to tune in and be a part of that discussion then. In the wake of that, what has happened? What has happened in Georgia in the wake of that indictment announcement of earlier this week? One of the things that regrettably is not only contrary to the rule of law, but is becoming more commonplace, I would offer in large part because of the statements being made by our former president in the public domain about the things that should happen to people who provide evidence, who come before a grand jury, who provide information to a trial jury, witnesses, other people with relevant facts that prosecutors and investigators have to sift through to determine whether or not there should be charges. And sure enough, just this past week, we have learned, as late as yesterday, not only are there threats being made against Fani Willis, the DA in Fulton County, plainly trying to intimidate her, trying to get her to stop this prosecution. That will not happen. That will not happen because not only is she committed to this prosecution, but the reality is that just by stopping a prosecutor alone, individually, does not prevent a case from going forward. But second, just as concerning as that, if not more concerning, threats against the very grand jurors whose names are under Georgia law released in the public domain, threats against the grand jurors who returned this indictment, who did their job, who came in, the people from the community who listened to the months and weeks and great number of hours of testimony, reviewed documents, did their civic duty, threats now brought against them as well, likewise being investigated, their addresses, their home addresses, posted on social media, again, as an attempt to intimidate them, to send messages to people down the road that if indeed you do your job, you do what you need to do as a citizen, we will go after you. And where does that come from? The allegations of misconduct, completely unfounded, against these good people, against the prosecutor, and also by the Fulton County Sheriff, Pat Levatt, who's also there, also getting threats as he is planning for the initial appearances by Donald Trump and other defendants there in Georgia. All of these people now the subject of threats and threats of violence against them, wildly inappropriate and in and of themselves can, in fact, form the basis, certainly for federal charges, state charges as well, under Georgia law. What do we know about what has happened in particular? And what is the story that comes out of one of those attempts, not only to address what's going on in Georgia, but also a similar threat made by a Texas woman against the judge who's presiding over the federal case. This is not the Georgia case. Now, the federal case that we've begun to talk about also alleging a four counts against the defendant, Donald Trump, in that federal indictment pending in the District of Columbia. Texas woman, again, presumably taking up once again the invitation by our former president. He posts on social media about a week or so ago. He says, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. That's the invitation. That is the invitation that Donald Trump sends to America, which in and of itself is not only a threat, an invitation to that kind of behavior, but should be the premise for not only additional review by the presiding judge, but also the basis for criminal charges for threatening witnesses, threatening people who are involved in this process. This past week, a Texas woman, her name is Abigail Jo Schry, S-H-R-Y. She lives in Alvin, Texas. Was charged with threatening to kill Tanya Chutkan. She is the federal judge in Washington who's overseeing Donald Trump's prosecution again in this federal case, seeking, again, criminal remedies against him based upon his efforts to overturn the 2020 election, kind of the parallel case that we're talking about there in Georgia. Again, Abigail Jo Schry. She called Judge Chutkan's chambers on August 5th, 2 days after Trump was arraigned in that federal case on the election interference charges, and she left a voicemail attacking the judge, who is black, with a racial slur, according to a complaint that was filed and released just yesterday. And in the message, Ms. Schry told Judge Chutkan again, very much at the invitation of our former president. She said this, if Trump doesn't get elected in 2024, those are also the that regrettably are being hurled at the grand jurors at the law enforcement authority under our engaged office in Georgia as well, because of the legitimacy of the process in which these people are under are engaging right now. You know well that last week Judge Chutkan addressed this very issue. She warned Donald Trump that she'd take measures to ensure that he did not make inflammatory statements about the case in a way that might intimidate witnesses. This exactly what happening, otherwise harming the integrity of these proceedings. The federal agents, in the wake of Abigail Shry's hurling this threat to Judge Chutkan, went to visit her, as they always do, about 3 days after she left that message. And she admitted she had called the judge's chambers. She told the agents that she had no plans to go to Washington, D.C. or to Houston, the area that one of her representatives represents. She had also filed and submitted and hurled a threat against her congressional representative at the same time. She said that if Sheila Jackson Lee, who is that representative, comes to Alvin, then we need to worry, according to that complaint. Significantly, again, the sense of deterrence out there, the message conveyed by what law enforcement does when you engage in threats against people who are involved illegitimately in the law enforcement system. What happens is Ms. Shry yesterday was this past week denied bail, ordered to be held in custody for 30 days following her detention in Houston. Significantly, Ms. Shry's father, Mark Shry, testified that she was a nonviolent alcoholic, those words, who sits on her couch daily watching the news while drinking too many beers. Mr. Shry told a judge in Texas that she often became agitated by the news, started calling people and threatening them. That, according to the complaint, they're coming out of South Texas. That may well be the motivation. The intent, plainly, is to threaten. It is appropriately responded to by prosecutions, by apprehensions, and by bringing those people into the federal and state criminal justice system as a way not only of deterring them, stopping them from doing these things in the future, but also deterring others who would, again, take up what is undeniably the invitation of our former president, now facing these four completely separate but related charges in various jurisdictions, alleging crimes against the people of various states, New York and Georgia, and crimes against the people of the United States of America as well. If you go after me, I'm coming after you. That kind of behavior, that kind of conduct itself, from my perspective, should not only result in a clear and unequivocal response by the federal judge, but could itself be the premise for yet more charges as Donald Trump continues to do this attack socially, in public social media, against the people who are prosecuting him based upon his conduct. And so let's talk more about that as well. We know that in the wake of that indictment, of the January 6th event, more events happening related to the prosecution there in Washington, D.C. John Eastman, again, and others also prosecuted in Georgia. John Eastman, one of the attorneys in the Georgia prosecution, he wants to be severed from the others. He says basically that because he was less culpable than the others identified, the other 18 in that indictment, his case should be tried separately from the others. This happening, John Eastman, at the same time that he's facing a disbarment trial in California. Prosecutors there indicating that they are not going to suspend that trial in California, even while the case is pending against John Eastman and others in Georgia. When we come back, a little bit more discussion about other things coming out of Georgia, coming out of Washington, D.C., and then a return to our discussion of the January 6th federal indictment out of the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C.
It's so hot. Wait.
Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 84 this afternoon, under mainly sunny skies, south winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight, 68. Mainly sunny skies tomorrow, highs level off around 90. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times Monday, with daytime highs approaching 80. 83 Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 64 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
And we are back this morning on Morning Cannolis. My name is Jim Santel. We're spending much of this first hour talking about various rule of law snapshots, almost all of them, not exclusively, but many of them related to the charges now pending against our former president in four different cases, two of them federal, two of them state, principally, but not exclusively, involving the events of January 6th. And right before the break, talking in particular about this latest indictment of just this past week coming out of Georgia. It is a state criminal prosecution, this sprawling indictment against Donald Trump and 18 others involving, among other things, RICO charges, racketeer-influenced and corrupt organization, a variety of different kinds of packages, pockets, if you will, of prosecution units in that case. Fani Willis telling us after the indictment was returned a couple of things, and that is she anticipates that all of the 19 defendants will make their initial appearances there in state court, as they should, prior to the end of this month. Donald Trump indicating through his counsel that he will likely surrender and, yes, in fact, be booked and perhaps even a mugshot taken of him for the first time in any of these cases. The feds have previously declined to do that. That's probably going to be happening this coming Thursday or Friday, the 24th or 25th, and all of them, all 19, coming in to get processed. The sheriff, again, indicating that he is going to treat all of these defendants just like any other defendant would be. That is the way it should be done. No special consideration for anyone. Not treated worse, not treated better than anyone else in our federal system, our state system. That is going to be happening this coming week. We know, in addition to that, other events having to do with these other defendants in that state prosecution. Fani Willis indicating that she would like to bring them all to trial fairly soon, on about 6 months or so. And March 4th of 2024, she would like to bring all of the defendants into state court. She has indicated she'd like to try all of them together. We'll see whether that happens. And indeed, as I said, we've already got a request from John Eastman, perhaps others, to be severed from the others. That will probably happen for a variety of different reasons, perhaps including various pleas entered by some of the defendants as they recognize that their exposure, many of them 5 years, more than that, up to 20 years in prison for some of the things that are charged in that indictment. In addition, we've got that others who are indicating, including Mark Meadows, they'd like to transfer the case from state court into federal court. Let's talk about that for just a moment or so. Highly unlikely that will happen. There are circumstances where a state prosecution can, in fact, be transferred into a federal venue. Typically in the civil area, where it's determined that the underlying events, the underlying activities by defendants who were a part of the federal government acting in their scope of their duties and responsibilities, that those should be prosecuted in federal court because of the nature of their duties. Things done in the scope of their employment, duties and responsibilities kind of under cover of their federal responsibilities. Here, unlikely that will happen. Why? Difficult to maintain that these kinds of things that are alleged in this state indictment are things done in furtherance of a legitimate government pursuit of duties and responsibilities. Beyond that, even if it were to move into federal court, it's not as if the case changes. Fannie Willis would then be prosecuting this case in federal court. Different courthouse, different location, but same charges, simply in a different venue. Again, highly unlikely that will happen. We'll almost certainly remain in the state court where it should. That's where the interests of the people of the state of Georgia are best vindicated by virtue of this state prosecution against Donald Trump and the 18 others, including people like John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani, and yes, Sidney Powell and Jeffrey Clark and Kenneth Chesbrough. Kenneth Chesbrough, one of the people also named with particularity in the Georgia indictment. He and some of the others identified as unindicted co-conspirators in the federal case in Washington, D.C. But here in Georgia, Fannie Willis and the grand jury that returned this indictment based upon probable cause to believe that all of this has happened. Here, we got some additional information about Ken Chesbrough. He's identified plainly in the indictment as one of the major movers and shakers, identified as a co-defendant along with Donald Trump and the others for all of these acts, also charged with the RICO violation in that case. And up to now, there's been an awful lot of analysis about the so-called suits versus boots, kind of a casual way of describing a very serious matter here. Those people who are in charge of putting together the overall scheme, the conspiracy to bring people together to undermine our election, the people who might be sitting behind desks putting together memorandums and protocols, all illegal to try to overturn the election results of 2020. Those regarded again sometimes as the suits in these enterprises, and the boots, the people on the ground, the people who actually stormed the Capitol on that day, about 1,000 people now under either investigation or prosecution, many of them convicted to this point. The boots on the ground. And there's always been sort of this divide. And the question has always been, gee, is there a clear connection between those people who organized this and put it in place, put together this multifaceted scheme, which again is a part of the federal investigation and federal prosecution, and also set forth in the Georgia prosecution as well. Is there a connection between those people who organized this, came together to draw the strings and make the tendrils between their organization and the people brought to Washington, D.C. Well, there was some significant information about that just yesterday, and it came through the nature of some videotape showing Ken Chesbrough. Ken Chesbrough, again, one of the six unindicted co-conspirators in the January 6th indictment federally, but also named with particularity among the 19 defendants in Georgia. We've got videotape now of Ken Chesbrough, who, again, one of the principal authors, as we will hear again in our second hour, of this so-called Wisconsin memorandum, other memorandums to put together the fake elector scheme and otherwise try to get Donald Trump to remain in power in the wake of the 2020 election. He is certainly one of the lawyers who is at the core of this conspiracy, this scheme, as Fannie Willis describes it, as a RICO violation. He's walking around. He's walking around on the grounds on January 6th. He is there at the time that the others, hundreds, approaching 1,000 other people, are attacking the Capitol and moving in. No indication that he himself went inside the Capitol. There may be an indication he was in a forbidden area, if you will, a place where people should not have been that day, which could be a low-level charge against him. But it's the first time we've got a connection, again, between him and the people that he was associated with, including the former president and others, and actual people on the ground. We see him in the company of Alex Jones, there on the grounds of the Capitol. And we also see him plainly with the, in the company of many other people there on the grounds of the January 6th assault on the Capitol that day. Why is that significant? It shows once again this linkage between the lawyers and the violence, the people who put this together and the people who perpetrated it on January 6th. When we come back after our first hour break here, I'm going to talk about one other matter related to the January 6th prosecution, and that is the Proud Boys. And then we're going to go back to that major grand jury indictment in the federal district court. Stay with us in our second hour coming up here on Morning Cannolis.
Hey, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Homeownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.